Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Had a stepmother who we loved taken from us, a father who we loved taken from us. Our kids have had their grandparents taken away. You know, I mean, we lost a lot. You know, before I die, I want to know who did it. Gary was born in 51. He was the oldest of the four kids. I had three brothers, and I am next to the youngest. He was the oldest. So our parents divorced when we were young, you know, and Gary was kind of always looking to, you know, make a better way for himself, you know, even at an early age. I used to mow lawns, and he was in a band back in his really young teens, you know, when he was, I think he played the drums. You know, he had high ambitions. He was a prankster. He was always playing jokes on people and entertaining people, always laughing, just a real high energy, you know, always had something going on. Before he got in the oil business, he worked in sales and was really good at it. I mean, he could sell anything. Like I said, he had that kind of personality where always laughing, cutting up, making jokes. He was kind of the life of the party, you know. He'd walk in the room and, you know, you would sure know he was there. He dressed to a T, and his laughter and joking around, that's what sticks with me the most.
You know, I've spent a lot of years thinking about a short span of time with Stephanie and the murders, and hadn't thought much about the past and about our childhood, and my fixation seems to be frozen in that short time span. Stephanie was always fun, and she was generous and kind. She was easy to be with, and she was funny. She'd always make up songs on the fly and put new words to old tunes. As we got older, some of them were quite dirty and crude. We always got a big kick out of that. So I won't sing the song because it was pretty dirty. But it was good fun, and, you know, you can stay mad at Steffi for long.
Reality is different, perhaps darker, for family members of the victims of unsolved homicide cases. Trying to make sense of exactly what happened and why continually lurks in the minds of these victims' loved ones, not to mention the nagging thoughts of injustice that come when pondering whether the perpetrator is alive or dead, and the possibly free life that they lived after taking a life or lives as families struggle to pick up the pieces and move on. How do you move on, though, when there are no answers and no accountability for the murderer? For those of us who haven't experienced this, There is no way to fathom the emotional repercussions that these individuals struggle with as a result of their loved ones' unresolved deaths. And it's also often difficult for them to express those repercussions in words. We can empathize, sure, but the only way we can attempt to understand what these family members face, usually daily, is to hear their stories and to listen to their voices. The aftermath of the murders of Stephanie and Gary Gillette is something that Gary's sister, Sherry, and brother Mike remember all too well.
They were killed on a Friday night. I guess it was after midnight, so it was actually on December the 14th, I guess, when they died, which was my mom and my aunt's birthday. My mom had a twin sister. Their birthday was December 14th. But we didn't actually find out anything until December the 15th when they were found. And I was just, my next oldest brother and I were just devastated. We didn't believe that anything like that could actually happen. For months, I couldn't sleep at night. I was constantly looking over my shoulder. I looked at people differently. I watched people more closely. I looked for anything peculiar or out of the ordinary. I felt like I was on guard all the time because we didn't know if they were wanting to hurt anybody else in the family. You know, we still don't know why. And at the time, those were real things, you know, of you just didn't know. I don't even remember going to the funeral. I was in such a state of shock. It was pretty awful. It definitely changes our lives. I mean, my next oldest brother, it just devastated him to the point of his whole world fell apart for about 10 years. You know, he and Gary were so close. And also, our youngest brother, which is Larry, he's deaf. Larry and Gary could have passed for identical twins back in the day. And this affected him because, you know, he lived in Corpus too. And, you know, whenever he would go out and about, people would see him and think that he was Gary. Mike, my brother, once we got to Corpus, he actually went into their home and, you know, got their clothes for the funeral. And that's something I couldn't do. I just couldn't.
It was bad enough that Larry and I had to go and pick out clothes for the funeral and go in the house and in the bedroom and see all the blood. And it was terrible. And he had the world by the tail. You could call anybody and they, you know, probably the first thing they'd, you know, come up with something that he said. Or you can imagine Johnny Carson on steroids a little bit, and kind of how Gary was when he quit it. And he was a lot of fun to be around. The main thing about Stephanie is that she was very sweet. You know, Stephanie was a very special person. And just, you know, she, you know, loved Gary, and they had a lot of fun, and they just enjoyed life. Just a tragedy, and I miss them. It's the grossness of it, you know, the rearranging the crime scene and all that, is what the detective sold us. They believe came back, rearranged the crime scene, stole the car. You know, it was pretty sick. I didn't see any photographs. You know, they had photographs. Sherry said, "Do you have photographs?" And Mr. May said, "You don't want to see the photographs."
For months and months, I couldn't sleep at night. Afraid to go to sleep. I would stay up until it started getting light out, and then I would sleep. It's always in the back of your mind. It's not something that I think about every day, but, you know, something will happen, and it will remind me of something Gary did or said when we were kids. And I realize, you know, not like I can call him up and say hi, or, you know, tell him I love him, or, you know, we miss him, or...
I spoke with Gary's brother, Larry, through an interpreter. He is hearing impaired. Larry struggles to understand why anyone would have wanted to harm his brother and Stephanie. He lived with Gary and Stephanie for months during the spring and early summer of 1985 and recalls the couple as happy, their lives and Gary's business going extremely well. Larry said that his brother was always fun and that everyone around him at any given time was drawn to him. Gary learned sign language on his own to communicate with Larry. He told me that Gary became quite good at it, and he fondly remembers Stephanie's sense of humor and kindness toward him. The funeral, he told me, provided another strange account of the constable's behavior. Larry had just been at Gary and Stephanie's home, helping detectives determine if anything was missing. Larry said that at the funeral, the constable was adamant about speaking with him about whether or not he saw a whiskey glass on the counter at the Gillette home. And the constable provided Larry with his business card when he told him that he didn't know about a whiskey glass, that he had other things on his mind when he was at the house. He also told me that after services had ended and almost everyone had left the funeral home, the constable wouldn't leave the side of Gary's casket. It was as if, Larry said, he was waiting to drop something in it when no one was looking. Larry lives with Gary and Stephanie's murders every day, unable to come to terms with the uncertainty of why they were killed. He told me that until someone is brought to justice, anger and pain will, inevitably, be a part of his daily life, and that what the murderer took from him is something that can never be replaced. Gary's mother had difficulty even facing the cruel reality that had been forced upon her.
It definitely took its toll, you know, on everybody, and needless to say, on his children, you know, not to mention our mom. That was something she couldn't talk about for years. I don't know if that's like a wall that you put up or what, but she had a hard time dealing with it. I mean, she just couldn't talk about it. You know, it's like a denial type thing. It was almost like she was content to believe, you know, Gary's in Corpus and, you know, got his life going on, too busy to give us a call up here, you know.
The family's frustration and pain only grew as the Corpus Christi police and the district attorney were unable to provide them with answers and ultimately unable to maintain charges against their suspect.
We heard so many different scenarios that what it could have been, you know. Mike and I made multiple trips to Corpus, going to the DA's office and, you know, trying to talk to policemen and detectives and the DA and trying to find out what happened and, you know, if they were had any leads. And, you know, we basically didn't really get anywhere. I don't know. Like I said, they had so many different scenarios and nothing ever really played out. I think they found some stuff associated with a constable books on how to commit murder and get away with it and, you know, stuff like that. I don't know how true that is. I don't know if that's just something that somebody just threw out there and then somebody else took it as fact. I don't want to know. I just know that this is something that we've never had any answers to and never been able to put it to rest. And that's always in the back of your mind and always in your heart. You just don't know what or why or who could do something so awful and then nobody be accountable for it. I think the people that are the ones that have been affected the most and the worst is, you know, Gary's children, Shay, Christy, and Candy. You know, every time I see Shay and Christy and Candy, I keep up with them on Facebook and, you know, I see their kids and now their kids are having kids. And, you know, I think, you know, look at what Gary missed, you know, look at what was taken. You know, he would have been so proud of his daughters and, you know, they're all turned out to be beautiful young women and it's just a shame. Every time I see him on Facebook, a lot of times I'll see a picture of him and it'll remind me so much of Gary or one of them will crack a joke on Facebook. No, there's Gary shining through. Definitely see it and love him to death, that's for sure. And even Gary's ex-wife, Debbie, you know, I can't imagine what she had to go through, you know, trying to raise the three girls and explain or try to explain, you know, why they don't have a dad anymore. You know, how do you explain that to three little girls? Debbie didn't have a very easy time of it either. I just hope that something comes of this, so that Shay, Christy, and Candy can get some closure, but so for the rest of us too. Of course, you know, our mom is already gone, and our dad died before this ever happened. But all the rest of us, we sure would like to get some closure on this. And it's not, you know, to watch somebody pay for this. I'm not trying to find out who did this for revenge or for anything like that, but just for closure for us, so that we can put it to rest.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There are, of course, two separate families affected by the events of Saturday, December 14th, 1985, since the madman who perpetrated the brutal crime took two lives that early morning. The anguish was, no doubt, unbearable for both families, who for years kept up with Corpus Christi police detectives and the district attorney, demanding results in the investigation. But the families ultimately dealt with the tragedy in their own ways. Though most of Stephanie's family do not speak publicly about the murders in their attempt to heal, her cousin, Vaughn, was unable to move on in such a way, and instead chose to spend decades investigating Stephanie and Gary's deaths. The clarity in which the family members of victims offer is sometimes a striking revelation on how a tragedy of that magnitude affected them, a testament to the importance of what was lost. Vaughn and Stephanie were very close, and the murders had a tremendous effect on the trajectory of her life from the moment she found out.
Stephanie and I started writing letters to each other as far back as the early 70s, because my dad was Army. So we were always, we lived away on different Army bases. And Stephanie's, you know, we started writing in grade school and continued to correspond up until the time she died. You know, we'd call each other, but we wrote letters to each other. And so I don't think that she had that, other, you know, that kind of a relationship or, you know, connection with many other people. You know, my mother saved me for last to tell me about Stephanie being dead because she knew how hard I would take it. You know, on Friday, the 13th, Stephanie had mailed out all of her Christmas cards. I still have mine. And I didn't get mine until Monday afternoon. So I had to work Tuesday from 1 to 9 in Bell's department store there in Oklahoma in Lawton. And I got to work and the phone rang. You know, I was on the floor working in the men's department. And it was my mother, and first thing she asked me is she said, "Are you on the floor?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I'm on the floor. I'm working." And she said, "Well, I've got some bad news to tell you." And then she told me, she said, "Gary and Stephanie are dead." And the first thing I thought was car accident. I mean, it doesn't enter your mind that somebody you know has been murdered. You know, that was the furthest thing from my mind. And she said, "No, somebody killed them." And I just... That was probably the second time in my life that I've cried. And I didn't just cry, I wailed. I left the floor and went straight back to my boss's office, walked right in his office and picked up the phone. And he and the assistant manager are sitting there and they're looking at me like I've lost my mind because I am wailing, you know, asking my mother what happened. And I hung up the phone, told my boss, "I'm leaving. You can fire me if you don't like it." I went straight to the time clock and we had those old stupid time punch time clocks, and I could not get my card in the slot, so I just threw it on the ground and went, got my purse and went home, you know, called my husband at work and, you know, told him what had happened to come home. And it was so funny because I was ironing my dress, and I kept saying to myself over and over again, this is someone else's life. This is someone else's life. And I repeated that to myself over and over. I went into shock, basically. It's like an emotion that you've never felt before. I mean, there's emotions, but when you have to fathom someone's been murdered, but not just murdered, but brutally murdered, I mean, it's like you don't know how to deal with the emotions that come with that. And it took us 8 hours, you know, to get packed up and get down to San Antonio, where my parents lived at the time. And we got there at midnight, and then the next morning went to Corpus Christi to the funeral. And for the next 9 years, I lived in denial that she was gone. I mean, until it got to the point where it was eating me, I couldn't deal with the denial anymore, and just had to accept, you know, she's just not someplace that she's someplace where you can't touch her or talk to her. She's gone. And there are times when I would call her old phone number and just let it ring until one day somebody else picked up the phone, you know, whoever got the number after Stephanie had it. And that's when I quit calling. That was probably 3 or 4 years that I would do that, just call her phone number and just listen to it ring. 20 years later, I was driving down the road, and I was thinking about that, and for some reason, I had blocked it out of my mind that I had been repeating that same thing over and over to myself, this is someone else's life, because I guess you're just trying to will it away, you know, you just want it to be someone else's life and not yours. And that last summer that I saw Stephanie's summer of 84 in June, when my mother's mother passed away, I hadn't seen her in quite a while. We met, and I stayed out at her mother's house with her, again, making my mother angry because I should have stayed over in the hotel with them that day, but I didn't, because I just so wanted to spend time with her just to see what was going on with her, because I didn't get to see her very often. And I'm just so thankful that I did.
The fallout from the murders of Stephanie and Gary Gillette stretches far and wide. The impact on Gary's three daughters, needless to say, was devastating. They were young when their father and stepmother were senselessly and violently ripped from their lives, and Gary and Stephanie's slayings affect them to this day, and not only in terms of their own lives. Though each one of the sisters' stories differs, a common narrative does exist, and that commonality is the difficulty each has with the lingering effects that their father's murder has had on, at this point, three generations.
I became a recluse at 14. I didn't go to school for like 2 months because I didn't trust anybody, you know? So it really messed with my mind as a teenager. You know, whenever something like that happens and the reality hits, you start thinking about everybody and who's capable of, and just all the talk and everybody that, because I was all over TV, I'm just kind of recluse and stayed that way for a while. You just don't know who you can trust, you know? The scary thing. I relive this every day. He'll never know if he is responsible. He'll never know what he took away from our family, you know? I mean, my dad would have had 14 great-grandkids right now and 7 grandkids and boys. And that's one thing he always wanted, those little boys. So, you know, my kids lost out. Their kids lost out. We lost out. My grandparents, aunts and uncles. So it affected a lot of people in a lot of ways, on a lot of levels. It's rough to get over. And it never goes away. You know, the pain never goes away.
It's been rough. My dad loved kids so much. And I know he wanted a boy so bad. And it's kind of ironic because, you know, they ended up with 3 girls. My son, he's grown up, he looks so much like my dad and acts so much like my dad. And, you know, I know he would have adored my daughter and my nieces and nephews. And, I mean, I think he would have been the most amazing grandfather. And I, you know, I used to get jealous a little whenever I was younger because, you know, I had really good friends and they had their dads there and, you know, daddy's little girl and, you know, always hugging on them. And I used to get angry because it's like, you know, my dad missed out on all of that. And, you know, he didn't get to see us graduate. He didn't get to see us get married. He wasn't there to help guide us. I know things would have been so different had he not died. And I think it's completely unfair. I did tell myself that I wasn't going to use that, though, as crutch growing up, that I, you know, I was going to do my best to try to make him proud because I always knew that he was just up there watching me, and I didn't ever want to get in trouble, or I didn't want to do anything wrong. I always wanted to live up to the expectation that he had for us. It's hard to try to describe to my kids, and all they know is stories that we tell, and they missed out so much. I mean, after my dad died, we really didn't even stay in contact with his side of the family very often because I know it was hard for my grandmother, and I know it was hard for his brothers and his sister, but, I mean, there's a huge disconnect between us and them. We, you know, we try to stay in contact over the years, but it's been hard.
Perhaps time and the distance it provides helps some come to grips with the loss of a loved one. But it is obvious that Gary's daughters and Stephanie's cousin will continue to seek justice for the murders of their loved ones. And their will to do so is strong.
You know, before I die, I want to know who did it. You know, I want Stephanie's parents to be able to have justice for their daughter.
We tried reaching out to the police station recently, and of course, every time we ask questions, it's always like they shut us down. We've all had to run around. It's like hitting a brick wall. You don't go anywhere. They couldn't even pull my death case up. It took them almost 30 minutes just to find it. I mean, they walked out, I can't even tell you how many times, but making sure that that's who it was. And I'm like, I know my father's name. We know his birthday. It's insane. Like I said, it's just always bothered me, that whole thought of just knowing that he was at that house. First of all, the room that he was sleeping in, it was my sister Shay's room, and that's where the hatchet was found. I just want it over. I'm tired of living my life the way we've been living and scared all the time and questioning and looking over our shoulder. And, you know, it's just, it's time to be done. So I'm not scared anymore. I'm ready for it to be done, and I don't care what I have to do.
Just some kind of closure would be wonderful. It would really be wonderful. You know, and I could care less if he's on his deathbed and confesses it. I just want to know, and I want to know why, you know. What was that important to take something away from so many people, you know? It's probably something that's going to make me even more angry than the whole situation, you know. But I still need to know.
There's just so much fallout from people being murdered. It's just unreal. So many lives are affected by it. You know, whenever the killer's caught, it's going to affect everybody in a good way, if you can call it that. You know, I don't believe in closure. There is no closure. You know, there's just acceptance. You accept it, and over time, I think for most people who go through having a loved one murdered, you get used to it, and it doesn't hurt as bad. You know, time tempers things, your emotions, and, you know, you just accept it. That's all there is. So, I mean, if there is any semblance of closure, it will be justice being meted out in a, you know, arrest and a conviction that sticks. I want it to stick. But the main thing is that whenever you have a chance to tell someone you love them, you better do it right then and there, because there are no tomorrows, you know, because I was going to call Stephanie on Tuesday night. I put off doing something. You know, I could have called her before that and just touched base with her to see how she was doing. But, you know, you get busy with life and you put stuff off. When it comes to your mind, hey, I need to call that person, put down whatever you're doing and go call them. If I've taken anything away from this, I think that's probably the biggest thing. There are no tomorrows.
Thank you. you have any information on the murders of Mary Stephanie and Gary Jean Gillette, please contact the Corpus Christi Police Department at 361-886-2840. We'd like to extend a huge thank you to Shay, Christy, Candace, Debbie, Mike, and Sherry for their contributions to this episode and for their support and help along the way. Thank you to Larry and his interpreter as well. A huge thanks to Vaughn for her help and support for bringing Gary and Stephanie's case to our attention and whose countless hours of research seeking to expose Stephanie and Gary's killer is inspiring. We'd like to thank former Corpus Christi homicide detective and current private investigator at the private eye investigation firm in Corpus Christi, Roy Gardner, for his help as well. Thank you to Dr. Grace Dukes, forensic pathologist and medical examiner, for her invaluable help with Gary and Stephanie's autopsy reports. Thanks too to Darren Dake, founder of the Death Investigation Training Academy and host of the podcast Coroner Talk, for his amazing insight. We'd also like to thank Danny Smith, retired Los Angeles County homicide detective and current writer of the incredible Dickie Floyd detective novel series, for his contribution. And finally, we'd like to extend a huge thank you to our friend and master researcher, Kim Smith, for her help with gathering information for the Gillette case. If you'd like to support Gone Cold Podcast, Texas True Crime, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/gonecoldpodcast. There are several varying donation levels to choose from, with perks to go along with each, including ad-free listening at all levels. Donations help us cover the costs of research and production, and we can't thank y'all enough for your support. Another great way to support the show is to leave a rating and review on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever else you listen. It helps guide more folks our way, and we appreciate it. You can interact with Gone Cold Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching Gone Cold Podcast. If you're interested in all things true crime, check out our go-to spot on the web, thetruecrimefiles.com. There you'll find well-presented cases, many unknown or ignored by the media, as well as book reviews, podcast reviews, and guest spots. TheTrueCrimeFiles.com is an amazing resource for learning about cases you might not be aware of otherwise. Check it out. Thanks for listening, y'all.